Sexton out front, Love. Kevin, three. Got it!
All day, that high dribble three.
Sexton with the tip, no. Rebound, fought for, Osman got it, laid it in!
Hustle.
How about the effort by the Cavaliers? Love got it back, feeds in the lane to Sexton, and he'll jam it home.
And that's the added feature to the bigger staff offense. When the big guys get the ball, Tim, there's always cutters.
Welcome to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Thank you for joining us on the Cleveland Cavaliers Radio Network. Now, here are your hosts, Tim Alcorn and Jim Jones.
From the Cavaliers Radio Studios at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in downtown Cleveland. Hi again, everybody, and welcome to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Hopefully you all had a very healthy and happy Thanksgiving, and we are glad to be back. Cavaliers basketball right around the corner as a preseason schedule has been announced. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Cavs have made some moves since the last time we were together on Cavs HQ. So, Jim Jones, let's talk about that a little bit. First of all, hope you and yours had a very happy Thanksgiving as well, Jim.
Yes, we did. And the test for that is, how do you feel the next morning? I felt stuffed.
I think that's true for the majority of folks. So, again, let's get into some of the moves that the Cavaliers made in the last week since we were together on Cavs HQ. So, the first move, they send Alphonso McKinney and Jordan Bell out to L.A. and get a veteran center in return in JaVale McGee. And, of course, he was on the Lakers championship team this year. A couple of those Golden State championship teams that we know all about. Your thoughts on JaVale McGee now becoming a Cavalier?
Well, they're looking for bench depth, and they're looking for guys that have impact but don't have to play a lot of minutes, because the strategy is still to give the young players who are inexperienced significant time so that they can keep developing. But in those times that they need a rest, fatigue, injury, foul trouble, or just a change of pace of the game, you know, you've got to have a bench, and you're not going to win in this league, and they're not going to play well if every night, you know, you're living and dying with your starters, and our starters are all young. So what Bickerstaff and Kobe are doing right now is they're building a bench. They're building a bench that can match up with the East. And in the East, you better have some size, because everybody's getting a little bit bigger. Everybody's coming back to at least having some type of impact with a post player, either on the defensive end or the offensive end. And so they need those kind of players. And they picked up some other kids too, didn't they?
They did. Let's talk about Damian Dotson. We saw him last year with the New York Knicks, averaged just under 7 points per game with the Knicks. Year before, he was in double figures at 10.7 per game. 6'5 shooting guard. Your thoughts on Dotson?
Well, it's about matchups, and it's about youth, and it's about athleticism. And if you think of the first-round pick, Okoro, and then you think of Sexton, and then you think of the athleticism of Drummond, now you've got something. Teams have to know how to deal with that, and they have to understand, how do we match up against Cleveland when they have that type of athleticism? And so this kid is well-fitted. He can play the one or the two. He can score on his own, and he can help other people score. So it just gives you an added feature.
And Jim, a move that maybe flew under the radar, but boy, for veteran leadership and a guy in the locker room, the re-signing of Matthew Dellavedova will be back.
Yeah, it's a strategy. And that strategy is to guide our bench, you know, keep them engaged when they're not in the game. And every once in a while, put Deli out there and let him make something happen. But mostly leadership. And there's nothing wrong with that. Every team should have that. In fact, most teams that have what they call a significant bench, it has leadership sitting on the bench. And that leadership is not determined by how many minutes they play, but what they can bring to the table psychologically, you know, how do they keep guys prepared, and talking to our young guards.
I'll tell you what, Deli almost another coach for J.B. Bickerstaff. He really knows the game and knows how to work with those younger players.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tim. And he brings the whole package. He knows our history. He knows where we want to be, because we've been there with him, you know, when we were at the top of the mountain. So So that vision he can help instill in our younger players who don't have that experience.
Well, an incredible guest will be joining us in the Legends chair for tonight's Cavs HQ, Spencer Haywood. He had an amazing NBA career. He's a member of the Hall of Fame, but he has an extraordinary story and life as well. So we'll have Spencer Haywood drop by and sit in the Legends chair right after this on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Welcome back. It's Cavs HQ presented by Sherwin-Williams. Tim Elkhorn along with Jim Jones. And, of course, each and every week on Cavs HQ, we have a legend settle into the Legends chair. And so getting good and comfortable in the Legends chair for this edition of Cavs HQ is indeed an iconic legend in the NBA, not only for his playing career, but really an historical figure in the NBA, and we'll delve into it with our guest in the Legends chair, Spencer Haywood. So, Spencer, first of all, a huge thank you to you for coming on the show. Hope you're comfortable in that Legends chair as you're joined by your former teammate, Jim Jones. So I'm sure there's going to be a story or two about that as well.
Got a few.
Okay. All right. Well, before we get to those stories, I want to paint the picture as far as your remarkable life and your career. I'll try to run through it quickly, but for the younger fans perhaps listening or not familiar with Spencer Haywood, I'm just going to go through this. You were one of 10 children in Mississippi. You grew up in Mississippi. Then you moved to Detroit as a teenager to live with your brother. So you play high school basketball in Detroit. 1967, you led Pershing High School to a state championship. You then go to junior college in Colorado, where you averaged 28 points and 22 rebounds per game. You're then a member of the 68 Olympic gold medal team. You lead that team in scoring, the 68 gold medal team, 16 points a game. Your sophomore year in college, you go to the University of Detroit. There, you averaged 32 and 25, 32 points a game, 25 rebounds a game. Then you decide to turn pro, which, of course, is in violation of the NBA rule at the time regarding players having to come into the NBA after their college season would have concluded. So you say, heck, I'm going to the ABA. And at 20 years old in the ABA with the Denver then Rockets, you average 30 points and 19 rebounds a game, and you were Rookie of the Year and MVP. Oh, my goodness. And we haven't even touched on the NBA career yet. Did I miss anything there, Spencer?
Nothing at all. You're perfect.
Oh, my goodness. So let's start with, first of all, your short college career, the junior college stint in Colorado, and then going to the University of Detroit. And after that sophomore season at the University of Detroit, thinking, hey, the numbers show it, my talent level shows it, I'm good enough to go to the NBA. But you knew the rule. So what in your mind says, I've got to challenge this rule?
What happened was, in the beginning, when I went to Trinidad State Junior College, I signed with the University of Tennessee as the first black to sign in the Southeastern Conference. Adolph Rupp, the then coach of Kentucky, had lost to five blacks in 66 Texas Western.
Yep.
And so he felt he should have the first black player in that conference. I mean, you know, so-called superstar. And so there was this rambling back and forth. And so Will Robinson, who had adopted me and raised me, who also became the first black coach in Division I history at Illinois State University, he asked me to, like, go down to this very fabulous place in Colorado, which was 40. It was supposed to be 360 miles from Denver, and it was supposed to be 25, 30 miles from Denver, and less than that from to Albuquerque, New Mexico. So I get stuck out there, and you know, Jim, you know how your people do. You know? So we get. So I'm thinking I'm going to go party in Denver. I'll party up in Albuquerque. I'll go down. You know, it'll be fun. I get out there. It's like we're like 420 miles from Albuquerque, 365 from Denver. So all I had to do is just play basketball, and study. And I was just studying. I had my head in this book because if you maintain a B average in junior college at that time, you could then leave after 1 year. So, and that happened. Well, when what happened there was in 68, the U.S. Olympic team was assembling their players. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar said, no, I'm not going to go to the 68 Olympics. I'm going to boycott. Alvin Hayes and Wesley Unseld said, no, I'm not going to the Olympics. I'm going to sign my pro contract, which normally you deferred your contract for a month until the Olympic Games are over, and then you go in because you could not play as a pro. And so they came looking for players. So they said, well, let's put together a junior college team to play against the NC2A. And the AAU team. The AAU teams were big back then, and y'all had a great team coming out of Akron Goodyear, Calvin Fowler and Jim King, who made the Olympic team.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so when we got down here to the Olympic trials, Jerry Tarkanian had put together this junior college all-star team. So we came in there, and we were beating everybody. We was playing. We had Johnny Johnson, Cliff Mealy, George Trapp. I mean, you know, all of the Renegades were like in junior college at that time because it was new to the NC2A that you would be bringing in black players onto your team. So we just went the junior college route and would come back in. And so Hank Iver saw me play, and he was like, oh, Jerry, don't you play that boy too much. Now, I think I'm going to pick him. And so when they get ready, Jim, to pick the team, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I got me some gear. I'm going back to Detroit, show my boys. Hey, man, I tried out for the Olympic team. Hold it. Spencer Haywood, you're picked. First player picked. I'm like, well, oh, my God.
That's an amazing story.
And so we get to thinking, you know, and, like, everybody is like, well, we got to put in and have your parents send right now while we're practicing up in Alamosa and in Colorado and so on. Have them get your birth certificate to you. I was like, oh boy. I signed an affidavit when I moved from Mississippi to Detroit, and my mother signed an affidavit in Detroit and went back to Mississippi. So I didn't have a birth certificate. So the Olympic Committee was going crazy. How could you be born an American without a birth certificate? I said, I have one. So they called my mother and said, Mrs. Haywood, you know, we got to have his birth certificate. She says, yeah, I got a birth certificate right here, but I'm not sending my Bible. Because I have to go to church on Sunday. This Bible does not go without me. You know, so we go down to Mississippi and they take a picture of the Bible on the John 21 is where I was written in the Bible because I was born by a midwife in rural Mississippi. So they get John 21, we get the birth certificate, and I get back to Alamosa, Colorado. I'm like, I got this birth certificate. Let's open it up. Charlie Scott, JoJo White. I open it up. Let's see what it says. And it says, Spency. Haywood. She didn't know how to spell my name.
That's awesome. Well, let's sneak in a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll delve more into this awesome story and life of one Spencer Haywood as he reclines in the Legends chair on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Cavs HQ presented by Sherwin-Williams. Tim Elkhorn along with Jim Jones and an extraordinary NBA legend in our legend's chair, Spencer Haywood. We're honored to have him. So, Spencer, you were telling the story about the Olympic team and so forth. And so before we move into the ABA, what was your thoughts on the league? Because it was certainly an upstart league, but it had some great talent. What were your thoughts on going to the ABA?
Well, I wasn't thinking about going to the ABA because Will Robinson was offered the job at the University of Detroit if they could sign me. And they signed me. I agreed on all principles, and so did Will. And once they got me, they said, well, we got you. You're too great of a player to leave. And where can you play? And the NBA had drafted Kareem number one that year. And Kareem and I was on the All-American team. Jim, let me just tell you all about that All-American team. The leading scorer on the All-American team in 68, Pete Maravich averaged 44 points per game. The second player behind Pete Maravich was Rick Mount. He averaged 39 points per game. Mm. And the player behind him, Calvin Murphy, averaged 33. And so there I was at 32, and there was Kareem at 29. So we were putting them up.
And making them.
So they Spencer, came to me and said, well, you know, Hannah Storm's father, Mike Storm, who was public relations and sort of acting commissioner for the ABA, said, look, if we can sign you to go to the ABA if you could just get 5 points and maybe 2 rebounds. This gambit would work. We would have something that we can then undercut the NBA and their draft. We'd get all of the guys before they get to the NBA, and this gambit would work. So I was like, hey, my mother's still picking cotton in Mississippi for $2 a day, and her back had went out, so she was dragging a sack of cotton, and she couldn't do anything. So I was like, yeah, I think I'll try it out.
Wow.
And that's how I ended up in the ABA.
Jim.
And the NC2A and everybody jumped on us and said, hey, you can't do this. You're breaking the rules. This is my violation.
That's right. That's right.
And Spencer, so we went ahead with it. The whole league endorsed it. And so I went to play there in the ABA. It was fun. It was fun. We sold out all of our games, our home games. But we had players posing for calendars while we were playing. We had slam dunk contest. Yeah. Jim, guys would lay on the bench posing for a calendar, and we're warming up. And we're like, wait a minute. We got to go. Because we were selling this new upstart league. And so my first game, I'm playing with Louis Dampier and Dale Carrier. So I'm back. I'm chugging back. And I had heard of the three-point shot, but I was like, ain't nobody going to be shooting that thing, you know? So I'm chugging back. I get back set back in the middle, and I'm waiting for somebody to come driving in. They pass the ball out to the corner. Swish! I was like, whoa! And they kept doing it, man. They were sharp shooters. So the ABA was so much fun.
Jim?
You know, Spencer, I have to give you all your accolades, but you're the reason why I turned pro at my sophomore year at Marquette. There's only been three people in our game that to me are gods. Bill Russell, I respect him so much because of his off-the-court social justice initiatives, but also on the court winning all the championships. And then you came, and I came up to see you play Marquette. And you had, I think you might have had 38 and 28 rebounds, and I never seen anybody dominate anybody. And I used to go see the Bucks play all the time. I never saw anybody dominate like you. And then Kareem. And, I was blessed to play with him in my last year in L.A. But the point I'm making is this, Spencer, is that coming from where you came from, I just want to know one thing. Picking cotton My people are from Holly Springs, Mississippi.
Oh, boy, you're right around the corner.
I know. What were you thinking about as a kid growing up so that these young kids can get an idea of what it takes to be successful? I mean, just give me something to hold on to. We got other questions and we got time, but yeah. but what was your thought process, you know, that that you saw and that unbelievable desire and courage to do what you did? The Supreme Court, Spencer? Really? You went to the Supreme
yeah.
Court? Talk about that yeah. for a minute.
Okay, well, in Silver City, Mississippi, where I'm from, and I want to remind you both that there is no silver, and it ain't no city. It was only, so it was only 375 people, and we were scattered all in these cotton fields. So I would pick cotton from sun up to sundown. And so my brothers and I, we would always say, who's going to be the best cotton picker this county had ever witnessed? And so I was working from sun up to sundown picking this cotton, and I enjoyed it because I was it's competition. And so I was trying to outdo my brothers who were older, and they were geeking me. You know, you got big hands. You could do this. You could be the best. And so I picked the two rows, which gave me eye and hand coordination. I pulled a sack of 100 pounds when I was 10. And so my legs and body had developed. And so I ended up doing all these things to get to be the best cotton picker. And lo and behold, a basketball came into play. My mother said, we're going to let you guys have a basketball court right here in the yard. Don't worry. And so we played in the yard. On our basketball court, and that's when I first fell in love with basketball. But the first game that I loved was golf, because I was a caddy at the country club there in Silver City, because we had so much land, they built the country club there. So basketball came to play, and I just fell in love with it, and I just played it for fun. I just loved to play. Then when I got to Detroit, all of these great players, I had to play for a place to stay when I moved up to Detroit. My brother was at, guess where? Bowling Green State University. And so I was supposed to stay and play at Bowling Green High School, but I didn't. I went on over to Detroit, and Will Robinson set up this exhibition where I played against all of the high school players, George Trapp and all of those guys. And then I played against the college players, which was Cassie Russell, Bill Buttons, and all of those players. And then I played against Dave Bing and John Tresvant, Reggie Harden, all those players in this game. It was like at Crunk, outdoor basketball court. And they were like amazed at how long I could play. And they kept pushing me. Like, how long can he play? He played one game, and the other young players trapping all of them. He ain't going to play another game. And I was like, I've been picking cotton for 12 hours a day. Are you nuts?
Yeah, basketball is easy at that point, no doubt. All right,
y'all
got
giving me some Converse shoes.
Great stories from our guest in the Legends chair, Spencer Haywood. We've got more with Spencer. He's agreed to stay on a little bit longer. He loves that Legends chair. So stay with us on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. The Cavaliers tipped off our annual season of giving by safely assisting those in need this Thanksgiving. A City of Cleveland van was used to deliver 200 reusable gift bags to 200 pre-selected families affiliated with City of Cleveland Resource and Rec Centers, where the Cavs recently completed basketball court refurbishment projects. Each gift bag was filled with a $50 Giant Eagle gift card and some Cavs swag. Cavs in the Community, brought to you by Discount Drug Mart. We'll be right back with the second half of Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Oh, we're having a great time on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams in the Legends chair. And certainly an NBA legend, not only for his playing, but for his historic role in the NBA, Spencer Haywood. And Spencer, I want to pick up there because we mentioned earlier you challenged the NBA rule that a player had to wait until his graduating senior class in college would be done before entering the NBA draft. Seattle signs you and before your graduating class, and this case goes all the way to Supreme Court. Supreme Court rules in your favor, and so the NBA at that time then established what was known as hardship cases for about 5 or 6 years, and then they just said early entry. But hardship cases, so without you, the LeBrons, the Kobes, the Moses Malones, I mean, all those young men that came out early, you were the trendsetter, very similar to Curt Flood in baseball as far as free agency, but yours was the early entry for NBA, correct?
Correct. What happened was the ABA signed me to a so-called $1.9 million contract in 1970. And so with that contract, they stated that they would put $10,000 into this Dogoff plan created by this Jeff Dogoff guy. And when I get to be age 50 to age 70, I would withdraw the money as an annuity.
Right.
And that was supposed to reach 1.5. But then they put a stipulation into the contract. You have to be employed by Ringsby Truck Line, who owned the Rockets, in order to get the money. And you got to live that long. And so I got this young lawyer named Al Ross, who was a young upstart lawyer. He was, you know, trying to make a name for himself. We'd go into the office of the Ringsby Truck Line in the Rockets and said, you know, we just wanted you to correct this contract, and we're gonna be fine. And then we got in touch with Seattle, with the Seattle okay. Supersonics, Sam Schulman, who was to change the system in the NBA, because the NBA, they had never had a player at an early stage. And so Jerry Colangelo was like, you know, we need to make a move, because this ABA is going to steal all of our players. Let's take that top dog. And so that's how I ended up signing with Seattle. And Sam Schulman says, we have to fight this. And I was like, let's fight it. My God, I want to play. Because they initially wanted me to set out for that year. But then I would have to go back into the draft. And who knows where I would end up in the NBA.
Yep.
And so we filed suit for the rights to play. And I got a 10-game injunction. So I step on the floor, and I'm thinking everything is fine. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, like Mr. Rogers. But no, they said, ladies and gentlemen, we have an illegal player on the floor, number 24. And I was like, wow. That's my number. So they kept saying that for 10 games. And then they get an injunction against me. And they got their injunction read. Ladies and gentlemen, we have an injunction against the illegal player number 24, and he must be escorted off this grounds in which this arena is set on. So they pushed me out off the grounds in which the arena is set on, and it was in Cincinnati. And they put me out into the snow. I'm standing out there freezing my tail off, and I'm like, what have I gotten myself into? Then I get another injunction. Then they get another injunction. We worked all the way through the court system, all the way through, and we finally get to the Supreme Court. And when we got to the Supreme Court, we thought we had a friend, and we did have a friend on the court. We had Thurgood Marshall, who was saying, wait a minute. You mean to tell me you can send a man to Vietnam at age 18, this man can't make a living for his family, and his family is picking cotton in Mississippi? No, we're not going to go for this. So we are going to rule in Haywood's favor to play in the NBA under the Sherman Antitrust Act.
Wow.
And that's when I started to play basketball in the NBA. It was a long, treacherous year.
Wow,
and
Spencer,
the NCAA and the colleges, everybody was like throwing bottles on me saying, you're going to rob the colleges of their richness and this and that. It was just crazy.
Spencer, one game that I went to, in Milwaukee, they were trying to boo you. And I remember Kareem standing up, walking out on the floor when they announced your name, they were booing. And he started clapping. You know, he was there to encourage you.
Before that, it was like all of the older players were told by the owners and by the agents that these young guys are going to push you out. So you have to be in protest and boycott against this player, too. So Kareem, normally they would go down into the locker room and leave me up there for a little while and let me sweat. But Kareem didn't go down. He just stayed up. So Kareem clapped, and he was like, and that's when the Sports Illustrated caught the cover and said, "Oh, we got one on. We got the young guys coming. They want to get it on." And so that's when the union said, "Okay, let's just let him play."
Well, an amazing NBA career it would turn out to be. Five-time All-Star, just under 15,000 points, over 7,000 rebounds. The career average, 20.3 points per game, 10.3 rebounds per game. Amazing. And inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2015. We've got one more segment with Spencer Haywood. We're having a blast with this guy as he's very frank and forthright in the Legends chair. So we're going to get one more segment with Spencer talking about his playing days with none other than Jim Jones. So stay with us on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Welcome back. It's Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams, Tim Elkhorn, Jim Jones, and, of course, our fantastic production team on the other side of the window. And that's Marty Allen playing the great music throughout the show today. Kurt McLaughlin doing some serious editing back there. And, of course, Leo Simone enjoying it all. And, of course, Jim Jones and our guest, Spencer Haywood, as he has settled very comfortably into the Legends chair as part of this Cavs HQ presented by Sherwin-Williams. Well, Spencer, I mentioned an extraordinary NBA career. Of course, your time in Seattle and then the Knicks, New Orleans, the Lakers, where you won an NBA championship with my co-host Jim Jones. Some time in Italy, and then you finished up with Washington. But Jim Jones, my illustrious co-host, my broadcast partner on Cavaliers basketball, what was it like playing next to and being a teammate of Jim Jones, Spence?
Oh, Jim was special because Jim was carrying two positions. You know, he was carrying the backup role for the center, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and he was playing behind me as a forward, a big power forward. So we go to camp up in, I think it was Palm Springs.
Palm Springs, yeah.
And so Palm Springs. So, you know, I'm out there trying to get my legs back because I didn't work out during that summer and I didn't do the things I should have been doing. But here was, we got, I mean, all of these great young players coming in and I'm trying to figure out, well, let me see how good this guy is from Michigan State. Nah, man. So we're out there playing, and every time you look up and you think where you should have the ball, he puts it right in your hand. Pow! And you just, oh, man, this is easy basketball and layup. And in practice, you know, you're 10-year veterans, and you're like, why are we, like, jumping up and down in practice, man? What's going on here? So Kareem whispered over to me, man, we got to reverse our age here because these guys are going crazy. Norm Nixon, he was pushing the ball up the floor so fast and pulled up shooting threes. Yeah, Jamal Wilkes, who was like slingshotting that nice smooth shot on the corner. Jim coming back on the left side, hitting jump hooks. And I was like, whoa, I think I got to go get high. Actually, that is what I did, and it wasn't that I planned it. But
well, Spence, I wanted to ask you about that because, in all seriousness, and you've been a lot of fun on this show. We're having a blast, but you went through some turbulent times in your career, and you've been very forthright about your substance abuse issues. So, share with our listeners, basically. What that did to you and your career, but how you've now totally turned your life around.
Yes. Well, in that same season, what happened, I'm hanging out with the people that I knew that in the recording industry, in the modeling industry, because I was married to Iman, in the whole fashion world and all of the movie world. So I'm hanging out up in Hollywood while Jim and all of the teammates are, like, you know, getting prepared to win games. I'm sitting up there at this big house, so this guy's back there cooking up some cocaine. So I keep looking at everybody, keep coming out, and their eyes all bugged out. So I thought, well, you know, I'm gonna try one. So I took one hit, and I swear, it was like something had grabbed me, and I couldn't let, and it wouldn't let go. I just kept going back and back and back and back. And then I would come to practice. I had an attitude because I had to have some Quaaludes to slow down the coke. And so I was falling asleep, and I was just a nervous wreck. But I kept saying, man, I'm all right. I'm all right. So I'm not getting enough playing time right now. I was in so much denial. And I tell Jim this story often because I figured, you know, Jim at the end said, Spence, hey, he shook me. Hey, man, you can't be doing this. We got to play. We got a championship. And that's the first time, because I went a whole season and nobody put me in check.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay. And so I got through that season. We got the championship. I was on the sidelines because I had been suspended for 3 games. And it was a terrible time. So then they shipped me off to Venice, Italy, because the league was like, we're going to make an example. We don't have a program for our players who are, and at that time we had a real crisis in the NBA with substance abuse, cocaine in particular. So I went to Italy, and my wife then put all of her work in Italy and France and all that. So we had a real good time there. And then I came back to play in Washington. Jim and I was on the team there. And I was, you know, like, I was doing really great. And then my wife had an automobile accident. And that's when I went home to take care of my wife and my children and her sisters and brothers, because they're Somalians and they were in my home. And I started to get myself straightened out and get something done. So Iman, she's out. Well, you know, all of us models and everybody, we go see a psychiatrist. I'm like, you, what the hell I look like going to a psychiatrist? And so she finally got me in there. And when I went in there and I started talking out my problem, he was like, you got a drug problem, but you got a lot of other problems. So I started just peeling off the layers. And I started to realize that I had so much baggage. I had baggage from Mississippi, being abused in Mississippi so tough. That Supreme Court case had me really. When I used to talk to Curt Flood, he was like, "You ain't gonna be able to play. You're not gonna be able to play." And Curt Flood, he was there at the Supreme Court. Muhammad Ali was like, "What are you doing here?" And so he was there, and here I am. I'm like 20 years old. So it was just so awesome to get the kind of help that I need. And this is my 30th year in sobriety, but my 30 years
awesome.
Of like getting the help I need. My daughter, Shakira, just used to see me going and dealing with my help, and she became a psychologist and psychiatrist. She's
great.
Now 30 years old. My youngest daughter, Isis, is over at Slam Magazine. My next daughter, Nikia, she's a professor at Lincoln University. And my oldest daughter, Zuleika, she's at Iman, Inc. and also Coke Industries.
Wow.
So I've been fortunate. I've been married to my wife, Linda, for 30 years. I still have a relationship with Iman. We have a granddaughter. So, and I have 2 grandsons who tell me they're going to be a basketball player, but my granddaughter says, I'll be better than all of them. They can't.
Hey, Spence, we got about a minute left, but real quick, I know you've got videos and books, correct? If you want to give that a quick plug.
Yeah, I have the book, The book is called The Spencer Hayward Rule, because the NBA never allowed my name on my ruling, because it was always, you know, he fought us to the Supreme Court, so we're not going to put his name on the ruling. So now Adam Silver and Michelle Roberts, they're getting ready to put the name on the ruling, so you won't be saying one and done, early entry, blah, blah, blah. It will be the Justice Spencer Hayward Rule. So that book is out, and it's truly special.
Yes.
And also I have the movie Full Court, The Spencer Hayward Story. It's Prime. It's on Amazon Prime right now, streaming.
Okay. Yes.
Oh, that's
here
awesome.
I am.
I will
alive
be watching.
And well.
Spencer Hayward, I cannot tell you how much I enjoyed this, and your former teammate Jim Jones as well. This has been a blast. Can we get a promise from you that you will come back at some point?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Oh, we'd love to have you. This has been a real treat, and so, again,
you,
we look forward to the next conversation on Cavs HQ.
Let's look forward to it. Okay, thank you, fellas.
Oh, it's awesome. Thanks,
Spencer. Thank you, Spencer.
Spencer Hayward. Right, boy, he was more than comfortable in the Legends chair. What a guest. That was awesome. We'll come back, and we'll put the finishing touches on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Oh, we'd be remiss if we didn't wish the co-host happy birthday. Yes,
thank
sweets.
You.
Sweets.
Thank you,
from
Marty.
Corn.
Thanks, Curdy. Thanks, Leo. Thanks, Tim.
Happy birthday, my
yes,
friend.
Sir. Thank you. Thank you.
May it
thank
be
you.
Joyous and may you celebrate. Happy birthday,
yeah, I am.
Jim
I
Jones.
Got up on my own. I'm fortunate. I got up on my own this morning.
There you go. Well, again,
2+2 still 4. 2+2 still 4.
As far as I know, Jim,
okay,
2+2. Of course,
I'm
Jones
good. I'm
22.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Jones
that's
22. Right. Well, listen, I just want to thank you as far as reaching out to Spencer Hayward. That was awesome. That was a great interview, and we will have him back.
Yeah, the thing about Spencer is he's totally confident, self-assured. These young players need to hear that kind of commentary because it takes you to another reality that can happen to anyone if you're not careful, if you're not aware of your environment, your situation, and the respect and the focus that you command because of the sport you play. A lot of responsibility for younger players. Spencer is just magnificent.
Oh, he was great.
And, well-respected around the league now with
yep.
young and old players.
Yep. Hey, real quick, before we close up shop, the Cavs have announced 4 preseason games, home games at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, Saturday the 12th and Monday the 14th against the Indiana Pacers, and then they'll go on the road at New York against the Knicks Wednesday and Friday of that week. So 4 preseason games. Jim, in about 30 seconds or so, what are you really looking forward to in training camp? Perhaps a battle that you're keeping an eye on, or just anything in particular that you'll be watching for?
You know what? The things I watch structurally are how fast they can play now. Now that our younger players have a better idea what's expected of them, even though they're not, they still need to come around, maturate. But they've got a better idea now as to what Coach Bickerstaff wants and Kobe wants. I just want to see how fast they play. What I've noticed is that the really good teams and the teams that are going somewhere and developing, each year they play faster and faster because of familiarity. And we've got some super athletes on this team, something that we never had, maybe one guy, maybe two. But now we're going to have a team full of super athletes who are going to be fundamentally correct. The other thing I want to watch is the young boy, Okoro. I can't wait to see him. Everything that I've heard about him has been positive. He's a man-child, and I can't wait to see this young man play.
Hey, let's play some Cavaliers basketball. Jim, happy birthday. Many thanks. Thanks to
Thank
Leo
you.
Simone, Kurt McLaughlin, Marty Allen. Biggest thanks goes to you, the listeners. From Cavaliers Radio Control, so long, everybody.